Welcome to Copyright Clearance Center's podcast series. I'm Christopher Keneally for Beyond the Book. It's Friday, February 21st, 2020. Our guest on the show is Andrew Albanese, Publishers Weekly senior writer. He joins me every Friday with news and insights on publishing and reading. Welcome back, Andrew.
Hey there, Chris.
So you are in New York for a change, Andrew. Your schedule so far this year has already called for plenty of traveling, and that pattern continues when you're headed next week to Nashville for the Public Library Association conference, which is a biennial affair.
That's right. You know, 4 weeks after the ALA midwinter meeting wrapped up in Philadelphia, librarians are heading to major show number two for 2020 in Nashville, the 2020 PLA annual conference, which, as you mentioned, is a meeting that comes every 2 years. Now, there's a lot of good news around the show. First, the PLA conference has been a very, very popular and growing event for years now. PLA is the largest subgroup within the American Library Association, the ALA, that is, of course. And I'm, in fact, expecting PLA to outdraw the ALA midwinter meeting. And for those who are planning to go, there really is a top flight program in place. You can read all about that on the Publishers Weekly site. Just search for PLA 2020 and our preview will come up. There's, you know, a terrific number of keynote speakers, great professional programs featuring hot topics in the public library profession, which anyone who listens to this program will no doubt know is full of hot topics these days. And more good news, the host city is Nashville. Our listeners may know Nashville is without a doubt a city on the rise. It's growing. It's growing increasingly diverse. Of course, it is the cradle of country music and home to the Grand Ole Opry, but it's also the corporate headquarters of Ingram. It's long been revered as a book city, and now, thanks to Ingram, it's becoming a publishing capital as well. And of course, the Nashville Public Library is a real gem. In 2017, the library was named Library Journal's Library of the Year, and it is, in fact, a cutting-edge, popular, and extraordinary library, and it's going to be a great host for PLA. So things kick off next Wednesday with former candidate for governor in Georgia and now a key voting rights activist and an author with a new book coming out, Stacey Abrams, and she should offer what I would think would be a timely and very engaging keynote.
Indeed, Andrew, it sounds like an attractive program for attendees, but librarians at PLA this year will arrive amid some jarring news coming from their membership association, a serious financial shortfall. What's the news about PLA's parent organization, the American Library Association?
Yeah, so now the not so great news. You know, at the ALA midwinter meeting, it was divulged to ALA council members that the association is in fact facing a serious shortfall in the ALA's operating budget for this coming fiscal year. And that prompted ALA to make a statement last week. And in that statement, ALA officials noted that basically their three main revenue streams, which is membership, conferences, and publishing, had all been declining in recent years while costs were rising. Never a good recipe. But over the last 3 years, ALA supposedly had a plan for this. They had, in other words, planned deficits. Now, in the statement, we've learned that, and what was told to ALA counselors, I'm told, is that ALA both underperformed in terms of its revenue and overspent on a few areas. So much for the good planning. ALA says now that, you know, the greatest impact of these unplanned deficits is going to hit, well, right now in this fiscal year with what they call a liquidity issue. In other words, a cash shortfall. And that's never good. As our listeners may know, there are a ton of like roundtables and divisions and all kinds of corners of ALA who suddenly might find their work very seriously impacted and suddenly impacted by this cash shortfall.
And how are members taking the news?
I think it's fair to say that they're not happy. And I think it's probably more accurate to say that a lot of them are pissed. And largely because many division leaders and ALA members are saying that they weren't consulted properly or made aware of how dire the situation really is. And the situation is not good for American libraries right now, which is, you know, basically why it's not good for the ALA. Because ALA is, of course, a membership organization. In their statement, ALA pointed to the fiscal challenges, you know, beyond this current cash crunch. And if you look at the ALA's three revenue streams, that's membership, conferences, and publishing, those are, you know, three pretty tough businesses to be in right now. And, you know, if ALA was, you know, maybe less forthcoming, shall we say, about the situation for the last decade or so, well, in their statement, they're being honest now. And their statement points out that, you know, given our politics and the rising deficit and, you know, the library workforce in the United States, well, basically, it's been going down. It contracted significantly in the aftermath of the 2008 recession. And ALA now says, well, it's not likely ever to rebound to the size or to the staffing patterns that it was prior to that 2008 recession. That to me is just a remarkable admission, you know, a decade after the fact, right? More than a decade after the fact. Although it was certainly not a secret to anyone in the library profession or those of us covering the library profession, but still, it really does put a lot more pressure on dues. You know, if you have fewer members, you get less dues and conference attendance. And those are two legs of the ALA's financial stool.
And what about the third leg of that revenue stool, that is publishing?
Yeah, as for the third leg, publishing, well, I suppose we don't really need to talk about the pressure that publishing is under in the digital age. I think we're all quite aware of what the internet means for the publishing business and how that's also put pressure on ALA. Now, ALA Publishing, to its credit, has really held its own in recent years. But, you know, let's be honest here. Publishing is a thin margin business in the best of times, and it's just never going to be the kind of thing that can pull up the slack for other underperforming units.
What do you expect the impact of this financial dilemma will be?
Well, good news too, you know, the ALA's endowment and its net assets continue to be strong, ALA says. So there are no plans or really no need right now to tap into those assets to sort of, you know, address its short-term cash needs. But ALA did already tap an asset when it sold its headquarters in Chicago recently. And I'm told that that deal, well, you know, it wasn't as good as had been expected. At the same time, the ALA has been involved with a massive overhaul. It's been doing incredible work to streamline the organization, coming up with a number of reports and recommendations through a steering committee on organizational effectiveness, which is known as SCOE, S-C-O-E. Well, the recommendations of that effort are now pretty urgent, right? You know, as ALA said in a statement to members, how much longer can we wait to make significant changes? And the answer is, frankly, not much longer, if at all.
So some changes are already in the works, including a revamping of the midwinter meeting. Andrew, do you expect we will even be talking about an ALA event next January?
Yeah, so the ALA midwinter meeting is getting an overhaul. The last meeting on the schedule is set for next January in Indianapolis. So we do have something on the schedule for next year. But I got to be honest, I can't imagine that that's going to be a really good meeting. I mean, it's the last midwinter in January in Indianapolis. And hey, Indy is a fine city, but it isn't necessarily convenient or cheap to get to. And let's be honest, too, January isn't exactly a, you know, plum time to be visiting the American Midwest. After that, there are two more events that are still on the schedule. They're billed as the new January event. They're no longer called the ALA Midwinter Meeting. One is set for Chicago, I believe, and the other for New Orleans. Now, ALA officials tell me they fully expect to have a January event. And I'm sure that the PLA meeting, being such a popular draw, could possibly fill in at some point with, you know, becoming a new January event. As for what happens for midwinter in that spot, I'm not really sure, but I imagine we'll know pretty soon.
And for the new ALA leadership, what this all means is a full plate of woe.
You know, and that's right. And you know, on the 24th, the ALA executive director, the new ALA executive director, Tracy Hall, comes on board officially. This is her first day, February 24th, as the new executive director. And talk about timing. So apparently there's not going to be much of a honeymoon. She'll have to dig right in and get to work. And I'll be really keen to hear Hall's comments on the situation in the coming months. But I have to say, ALA is delighted with the hiring of Hall. So there's some confidence there. And going forward, you know, confidence always goes better when you have, you know, cash, let's be honest. But if you don't have cash, confidence becomes even more important and more essential. So I think a lot of us are going to be very keen to hear what Tracy Hall has to say as she gets underway. And I guess one final observation to point out here, and that's that, you know, ALA is a long-standing organization with a rich history. It does important work. It does very good work. As a membership organization, it can be very unwieldy too. We've seen plenty of examples of that. But its importance, the ALA's importance, I think is undeniable. And when I say unwieldy, I mean that, you know, ALA is at heart a professional organization of librarians. It's a membership organization. But it's also had to fight for essential rights and values that all of us Americans benefit from. That's freedom to read, to assemble, equity, diversity. And in recent decades, too much, in my opinion, has been pushed onto librarians' plates. I mean, you have local governments around the country who are facing budget shortfalls of their own, who are giving up on social services. And when social services decline, where do people who need those services wind up? Well, at the library, of course. And you know, librarians have become social workers. They become mental health professionals. They're expected to do story times and then administer Narcan to overdose victims and tend to the homeless. And in some cities, it's become just downright dangerous on occasion. You know, just this week, a library employee in Rockland County, New York, was stabbed to death by an unstable patron when asked to turn his music down. And my point is that, you know, you can't see all the problems that ALA is having as just their problems, because we value libraries in this country. There are problems too. We value librarians in this country. So there are problems too. You know, ALA as an organization is supported by its members, but it serves all of us in some way. And publishers too, I'll remind you, especially in the midst of these battles over digital content. So, you know, I'll just close all this by asking people to think about the value of their public library and to think about how much they value their librarians. And if they are inclined to think of what's going on with ALA as a library matter or a housekeeping matter or poor management ALA, well, think again.
Well said. Andrew Albanese, Publishers Weekly senior writer, thanks for joining me today on Beyond the Book.
My pleasure, as always.
Coming next on Beyond the Book, while the public may marvel at machine-generated output from Siri and Alexa to their questions about the world, publishers are beginning to understand that producing the input to help such machines form answers is an attractive, forward-thinking opportunity. As part of STM Week in London last December, I explored with a panel of technologists working in publishing what it takes to make content ready for computer readers. Springer Nature's Andy Halliday explained the critical need for structure.
It's a very basic thing about machine readability is having the availability of structured data for all of your content. Now, we found through that process that not always there. So we've embarked upon a much bigger program to try and, you know, start provisioning full text structured data for all of our content, so we can then actually widen the information that goes into any kind of summarization book in that case, or summarizing journal content for a different purpose. But it's actually led us to realizing that, you know, having full text XML basic, having good ontologies to describe the content well, having it well tagged and consistently tagged, so that actually the machines who read that content can make linkages between things which could be so far apart as 10, 15 years and across various different geographical boundaries.
Are publishers ready for the new readers? Next on Beyond the Book. Beyond the Book is produced by Copyright Clearance Center. Our co-producer and recording engineer is Jeremy Brisky of Burst Marketing. Subscribe to the program wherever you go for podcasts and follow us on Twitter and Facebook. The complete Beyond the Book podcast archive is available at beyondthebook.com. I'm Christopher Kenealy. Thanks for listening, and join us again soon on CCC's Beyond the Book.